And as Dr. Omar indicated, well, I'm focusing on that other major disease of citrus, Wanglongbing. And the work that I'm describing is being done at the USDA Agricultural Research Service U.S. Horticultural Research Lab in Fort Pierce, Florida. And I'm collaborating with a bunch of folks, and specifically I'll be talking about collaborative projects with these researchers. So for those of you who are not familiar with our disease, and you should be because it's probably the biggest agricultural crisis being faced in the world right now, this disease, Wanglongbing, also known as citrus greening, first identified in Florida in 2005. It's estimated, and I think this number may be low, that 80% of Florida citrus trees are infected, and certainly some groves are no longer productive. It's associated with the phloem-limited bacterium, Liberibacter asiaticus, and vectored by this little critter, the Asian citrus psyllid. Within a few years of infection, many citrus trees become quite weak, have poor quality fruit, lots of drop, and trees may die or become useless. And Ariel Singerman, a new economist at the Citrus Research and Education Center, recently conducted a workshop with growers representing about 150,000 acres of production. And the conclusion was that on those plots that were still being actively farmed, that the crop production had been decreased by about 40% compared to healthy plots. And this is what the most common symptom is of Wanglongbing, this blotchy model. And this is why it's called greening, because fruit are often small and somewhat green. They don't develop the solid color that they normally would. So this is really quite a big deal. I hope to impress that upon you by showing you this slide. In the last 15 years, and admittedly this is not all due to Wanglongbing, but there's been a 60% reduction in citrus production in Florida. And it's the lowest production in Florida in the last 50 years. This is a slide that was provided to me by Steve Futch. This is the same tree in January 2011 before HLB had much of an effect on the tree, just entering into the grove. This is what the tree looks like in January 2015. So 4 years of change. And what you see is that the canopy is much thinner. The fruit are somewhat fewer in number. This is probably around the 40% reduction that's considered typical of well-managed blocks. And you can see that there's some really very, very green fruit in addition to the fruit having poor color overall. So we are finding some tolerance and even some resistance in conventional citrus, if you will, that may provide useful medium-term solutions. But there's general agreement that transgenics are perhaps the most promising opportunity for us to have true immunity, very strong resistance to this disease. And of course, a big advantage of transgenics, if they're accepted by consumers, is that we can use the cultivars that we're familiar with, that we know how to handle for processing and fresh fruit production. So in our program, we're using transgenics as just another source of variability for plant breeding. So there are a number of transgenic strategies we're following, too many to really discuss. Some are a direct attack on the pathogen using antimicrobials. We're also using some antibody approaches that I'll touch upon. A number of folks are looking at upregulating basal defense genes, and through genomic information, we're identifying gene products that specifically target the host that we may be able to interfere with, as well as looking at trying to overcome what may be an excessive defense response that contributes to the symptoms that we see. And some other crazier things. And then in addition, there are a number of psyllid targets that are being considered, and I'll touch upon one of those. So antimicrobial peptides are widespread in multicellular organisms. They're sort of the first line of defense against most diseases. Many of them tend to be broadly active against groups of microorganisms, which make it possible for us to identify resistance to multiple problems with the same transgene. And the mode of action of these antimicrobial peptides is largely intercalation into the membranes of the pathogen and depolarization that renders them no longer capable of metabolism. Most of these are very small molecules, and there's the exciting possibility that they may move systemically, making a genetically modified rootstock solution possible. That would make it possible for us to use the same rootstock for a number of different cultivars instead of having to deregulate 10, 15 different cultivars. And so the result of high expression or presence of these antimicrobial peptides is death or prevention of growth in the pathogen of interest. I do need to point out that Eric Murkoff, Texas A&M University, working with Southern Garden Citrus, have probably the furthest along transgenics for resistance to HLV. They have some material that expresses a spinach defensin gene, and this is a transgenic Hamelin next to a standard Hamelin tree. They keep coming up with improved versions of this, and I think they now have what they think is really going to work, although this is, to my knowledge, still unpublished. And the best material has two different spinach defensins expressed in the same trees. So some transgenes we're studying for HLV resistance, and we're looking at a number. I'm working with Gautam Gupta of Los Alamos, looking at chimeral peptides. These are peptides with two different functional portions, a recognition sequence, in this case it's the citrosthionine, and a lytic sequence. In this case, we're showing you the synthetic antimicrobial D4E1. In earlier work, in which Dr. Gupta was involved, they showed that this chimeral strategy resulted in greater efficacy against another bacterial pathogen, Xylella fastidiosa, that causes Pierce's disease in grape. And we're now testing this and are seeing some really good responses. That it's really the first material from our program that I'm excited about in terms of transgenic solutions for HLB. And we have synthesized and have newly transformed some variants that have citrus-only genes, which we think will make it much more appealing to skeptical consumers. This actually is showing the response to canker of some transgenic carrizo rootstock. And what you see here are some carrizo lines. Each row here is a different event. Carrizo lines expressing that chimera of the thionine linked to a D4E1. These are controls, and this is the D4E1 alone. So you can see that we're really getting quite a nice increase in efficacy. And I've got some even more exciting photographs that I'm not privileged to talk about at this point. Dr. John Hartung at Beltsville Agricultural Research Center developed a group of small chain variable fragment antibodies against Liberobacter asiaticus. And we have multiple scFv against two Liberobacter proteins of interest, INVA and TOL-C, that focus on exterior epitopes. And the idea here is that we can take these scFv, transgenically express them, and interfere with the ability of the Liberobacter to cause pathogenesis. And we have hundreds of transgenic citrus trees, and we're just now starting to screen those. In terms of upregulating resistance, effective pathogens avoid detection by plant immune systems. For example, the bacterial flagellin is often recognized by binding to plant FLS2, which is an exterior epitope, and upregulating defense genes. Now, the FLS2 in citrus does not recognize the flagellin from Liberobacter. And so here's an example where it is being effectively recognized. So flagellin from the pathogen, and it's been shown that a small peptide, FLAG22 is the most important component of that, is recognized by the FLS2 that then upregulates jasmonic acid and the salicylate pathways to produce a number of gene products further down the line, resulting in reduced susceptibility to disease. So not only is the flagellin from Liberobacter not recognized in citrus, most citrus species, the ones that are highly susceptible to canker, do not recognize the flagellin from Xanthomonas citri. And what's interesting is that even though there are no flagella that have been visually identified within Liberobacter, they do produce flagellin. And that makes it possible that we may be able to create a system in which the flagellin is recognized by the plant. We've created transgenic Hamelin and carrizo expressing an FLS2 from Nicotiana. And they show enhanced canker resistance. You can see here the control with lots of citrus canker. This is Hamelin. Control with lots of canker. This is carrizo. And then two different lines that show much reduced development. Not only do they show reduced lesions, they also show a much greater production of reactive oxygen species in response to challenge with the FLAG22 from Xanthomonas. Upregulation of this defense may also reduce HLB severity simply by increasing the defense responses overall, because there are all sorts of critters constantly challenging our citrus trees. So that's our hope here. it's a little less likely, I think, that the flagellin of Labarobacter directly will result in this response. So genomic information, which is, as we know, is a fire hose of new information for us, is providing some new targets. One example is this flagellin FLS2. Another example is it's been shown that the LuxR, but not LuxI, in the quorum sensing system is present in Labarobacter. And for those of you who aren't familiar with quorum sensing, LuxI produces acyl homo serine lactones, and when that is present in large enough amounts, it is then recognized by LuxR that results in upregulation of genes, changing gene expression typically to result in greater pathogenesis. So the LuxR in Labarobacter may recognize these N-acyl homoserine lactones from other psyllid endosymbionts, because remember that this bacterium lives not only within the infected citrus tree, but also within infected psyllids that then transfer the bacterium, triggering expression of genes that are critical for colonization and possibly for transfer of the bacterium into the salivary glands and then into the citrus host. And it may well be associated with biofilm formation, which is very common with quorum sensing in other bacteria. There are other bacteria that only have LuxR, and it's been proposed that they may recognize plant signals that are critical to pathogenesis. But what we're trying to do is we've introduced LuxI into some citrus, hypothesizing that if we can generate enough of the homoserine lactones, we may result in immediate transition from planktonic Labarobacter to biofilm Labarobacter, hindering systemic development. We're also utilizing RNA interference. I think most of you are familiar with this. It's primarily a response to virus infection in which double-stranded RNA is recognized by Dicer, cleaves up the mRNA or the double-stranded RNA into small RNAs that then look for the homologous sequence and trigger further cleavage. And this results in silencing of genes. So the primary function in plants naturally is to suppress double-stranded RNA, but it's possible to suppress any gene that is produced within the plant. Unfortunately, it can't be used directly against bacterial genes inside the bacteria. It's got to be a gene that's expressed within the eukaryote. So we have transgenics expressing hairpins designed to target citrus genes that may be excessively expressed in the most susceptible citrus, resulting in greater symptoms. And we have some new constructs that have already been shown to be effective when the double-stranded RNA is produced by a CTV expression vector. That's work by Sidharme Gowda and Bob Shatters. And so it's been shown to work in vitro, and using Tristeza virus expression, we're now using it transgenically. All of our material, we're aggressively challenging with HLB. We start with a no-choice exposure where every plant is exposed to infected psyllids, and the psyllid have no choice but to feed on the plant because that's the only plant that's available to them. And David Hall is leading the challenging effort. And then we keep them for several months in a free-flying psyllid house that's just loaded with these little critters, the Asian citrus psyllid. And then we plant them out in the field for further challenging. We have we're both blessed and cursed that our farm in Fort Pierce, Florida has abundant HLB. Essentially every tree is infected, and there is no systemic control of there's no regular control of Asian citrus psyllid. We're also working on some new tools. Almost all transgenics in commercial use are using first generation components, constitutive promoters like double 35S from cauliflower mosaic virus. Bill Belknap, who's another ARS researcher, has been working with us exploring new genes from citrus that may provide much greater tools. And we have some very highly tissue-specific promoters, some specific to the roots, some specific to the phloem, and even others that are specific to ovules. And this gene architecture results in very high phloem expression, we've shown with reported genes. We're also working with another ARS researcher, Jim Thompson, where we're using recombinase-mediated exchange platforms to provide an opportunity to stack genes once we have a transgenic that's working against one target, to be able to add other genes that will further enhance it. So what's the future of transgenic citrus? These are my thoughts, not USDA policy, I need to make clear. Firstly, they likely will not be available in citrus for at least 3 to 8 years because of the time necessary for deregulation. initial adoption will be controversial and almost certainly will limit some markets, so we need to have very substantial benefits, virtual immunity in my opinion, are specific markets targeted where transgenics simply won't be an issue, which I think is true of most U.S. markets. As with all disease control, there's going to be an ongoing evolution of improved HLV-resistant citrus cultivars, and transgenes will precisely target priority traits in the future with routine multiple stacking. Almost all crops, I think, will ultimately be transgenic because of the many benefits in terms of environment, increased yield, and enhanced benefits. And the thing I like to say particularly to consumer audiences, to public audiences, is that ultimately organic crops will be transgenic because of the many benefits. But just my opinion. Most of you, or many of you, may have seen this New York Times article in which they talked about the importance of developing transgenic citrus. Fewer of you may have seen the Mother Jones article, a noteworthy publication to be extremely liberal in their use of genetically modified, support of genetically modified materials. But here they actually endorse use of GMOs to find a solution to HLV and citrus. A whole bunch of folks contribute to this work in the lab, in the greenhouse, in the field. We're fortunate to get funding from the growers through the Florida Citrus Research and Development Foundation, New Varieties Development and Management Corporation. The Florida Citrus Research Foundation would get some money from the California citrus growers, USDA APHIS, and the Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services. They clean up our new cultivars that we've identified in the field and make it possible for us to plant them out broadly. So I don't have any time for questions. If you would like to discuss it further, I'll be here for the rest of the meeting and look forward to hearing your questions and ideas. If you've got a good idea to solve Wong Long being in citrus, you should talk to us because we need to find a solution as soon as possible. Thank you.